Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour for May 16th, 2019. And a few topics I'll be covering tonight. One is regarding desertification, the creation of deserts on planet Earth. And if you look at the land mass of Earth today, the part that's above water, it's about 50% desert. Now, what is a desert? A desert is a region basically in which the topsoil has been blown away. There is little rainfall because the heat generated when the sunlight hits the land, the updrafts prevent the clouds from forming, and it prevents that cycle of rain, etc., which keeps everything growing. And it's growing, they say, by an amount equivalent to the state of Pennsylvania every year on a worldwide basis. So that's a lot of land going back to the desert. And you have to understand that some of the deserts of the world, some of the biggest deserts, were man-made. The Sahara Desert, which I think is the biggest desert in the world, I might be wrong, but I think it's the biggest desert in the world, was man-made. There was a time when it had plant life, abundant plant life, trees, etc. But once you cut them all down and you start the cycle of desert, it's apparently impossible on a natural basis for it to return, or at least it's going to take an awfully long time, more than thousands of years. But there are people out there that are working on reverse desertification. So in other words, the greening of the deserts. The issue in the modern countries is that in areas like the breadbasket of the United States, where we have Indiana, Ohio, Iowa, Minnesota, Kansas, Nebraska, the Dakotas, were the areas where we grew the majority of our basic food, our grains, which is corn, soybeans, wheat, and other various types of grain, oats, etc. And the land, because of the use of modern fertilizers, the Monsanto, the monster fertilizers, and herbicides, which kill off basically anything not involved in your ecosystem, your contrived ecosystem, the Frankenstein ecosystem of Monsanto, anything else simply cannot grow. So you have literally, and I've talked about this before, just repeat it. I was driving through Kansas one time. I think it was Kansas, Nebraska. No, maybe Nebraska. It was canopy corn season. The corn was, 10 feet tall. Came across a section of land which had not been planted. And it was like to fence line. It was just a flat piece of land and one little weed growing. This is at the end of the growing season. So there's one little teeny weed struggling to grow out there. And not a blade of grass, nothing would grow on that land if it was not planted and compatible with Roundup ready plants. So the point is that the middle section of the United States, and you can look this up if you look up the depleted land maps and you look it up on the internet, you're going to find that some of the most depleted land is in the central United States. So how can they grow these magnificent crops? Well, it's just through ammonia fertilizer and Roundup. Roundup kills everything else. The seed of the corn, soybeans, is Roundup ready. In other words, it's resistant to Roundup. And you have these amazing crops, but there's little food value in the crops that are grown there. But one of the things that I'm particularly interested in studying is the movement of water. And so a week ago, I talked about the movement of water from Greenland to a little country called Sierra Leone in Western Africa. And I talked about the impossibility of this, just the logistics, the numbers, the logistics of moving water from Greenland, which is basically running off into the ocean, beautiful fresh water, and how to move that to this little country, Western Africa, Sierra Leone, with 7.5 million people. The end result is that it is impossible with, given our energy and technology, it would be literally impossible. But is there a way to move that water? And actually, if you look at the alternatives, the ability to move that water from Iceland or from Greenland to, say, the northern coast of Africa, to the Sahara Desert, is really beyond current capabilities. Remember that a few weeks ago I talked about the number of supertanker ships that it would take to move a quantity of water to Sierra Leone. And I said that 83 supertankers, these would be oil supertankers working continuously day and night for an entire year, talking about the quantity of water used on average by people, which is 20 gallons of water per day. This is for 7.5 million people. It would take 83 supertankers working 24/7 all year long to supply that amount of water to that small Western African nation. Now, I want to give you some fun facts here, just to give you an idea, because people hear about the Greenland ice sheet all of the time and comparing it to the Antarctic ice sheet. The Antarctic ice sheet is just huge compared to the Greenland ice sheet. But let me give you some fun facts here, just in terms of percentages. The Greenland ice sheet is the equivalent of about 127 Great Lake volumes. So if you take all the water in the Great Lakes, Superior, Michigan, Huron, Erie, and all of the Great Lakes, if you take that volume of water, and if you froze it, 127 times that is the amount of water on the Greenland ice cap. So it's a good chunk of ice, goodly chunk of ice. Now, you've always heard about the infamous melting, and here is the rate that it's melting at today. Now, this is over a 10-year period, and this is clocked from 1996 to 2005, so that's a 10-year period. How much water came off of Greenland? These are estimates, probably fairly good estimates, measured because there's a lot of scientific work being done there. It's about 1,500 cubic kilometers of water have come off of Greenland in the form of water, and that's about 0.05% of the total ice cap on Greenland. And so just comparing that again to the Great Lakes, that would be about 1/15 of the amount of water in the Great Lakes. So that's a lot of water. Now, you know, when we talk about these numbers, and, you know, we can, you know, these sound like very big numbers. But then when you talk about, for example, the amount of water in the atmosphere or the amount of evaporation from the oceans, etc., then we have to look at the total volume for the entire world. And so the other issue is that the ice caps are growing vertically every year. So we can't just look at, it's like when you're driving your car down the road, you can't just look at, say, the exhaust coming out the gas or the exhaust pipe and talk about the overall consumption of air. You have to talk about the air going into the engine, also the amount of gas that's changing from liquid form to vapor, etc. You have to put all of these facts together. So, for example, another little fun fact regarding water vapor is that, and by the way, I was part of a program called the XPRIZE to extract water from the air. Successfully did that, won five final contestants and got down to two final contestants, and also was awarded the XPRIZE Technology Innovation Achievement Award for extracting water from the air using a natural energy source, but that's another story. So let's look at the amount of water in the atmosphere compared to the Great Lakes volume of water. And, okay, so the amount of water in the air is about six times the Great Lakes volume of water. So in other words, in the air, in the Earth's atmosphere at any given moment, there is six times the amount of water in the Great Lakes. So let's compare that to the amount of water coming off of Greenland. But first, let's compare it to the amount of water in the Greenland ice cap. The amount of water in the atmosphere of the Earth is about four times the amount of The amount of water in the Greenland ice cap is about four times the amount of water that's in the atmosphere at any given time. And so, therefore, the amount of water coming off of Greenland is about 0.2% of the water that's in the atmosphere. So a very small amount. So if that, let's say that 30% or 40% of that water evaporates and goes into the atmosphere, then literally it's a drop in the bucket compared to the water that's simply in the atmosphere. Now let's talk about water in the atmosphere and what happens to it. Most of it ends up in the poles. Most of it ends up as snow because there's a hydrological cycle that moves water from the equator up towards the poles. Most of that water ends right up back on the ice cap. But nobody's telling you about that, are they? There's an all-out effort right now to renew the global climate change, whatever. And let me just be very clear about this. Anybody, you know, what they're doing is selling science on emotion. It's really not science. You say, have Phil Nye, the science guy, going on late-night TV swearing, using the F word, screaming and lighting a globe on the desk on fire and then putting it out with a fire extinguisher, trying to sell that the world is on fire when really it's not. The data that has been used is skewed. For decades, only people that believed with climate change would be allowed into government-funded positions. This has been the norm, and no politician would go against it because they would lose elections if they talked badly about climate change. Trump is the first guy along that says, hey, this is all baloney, and it's all being used to control the United States. The Paris Peace Accord, if you really don't know about this, if you haven't read it, allows China and India to pollute at any level they want. China is building a power plant every day, a coal-fired power plant, and they're burning dirty coal. This is absolutely beyond incredible. And the Paris Accord would allow countries like India and China to pollute at any levels. Now, the pollution, you have cities in China that are 300 million people. And, you know, where are they putting all the people? Well, the pollution there is so bad that you can't breathe. People are literally dying. And I've been in some bad cities. I could name a few, like, say, Mexico City. Mexico City isn't even on the top 10 list. The top 10 lists are in India and China, where the pollution, you just can't even breathe there. You can't go there. People are dying in the streets from pollution. And they're going to allow, the Paris Accord would allow those countries to pollute even more. Like I said, China is opening a new coal-fired power plant every day. The amount of energy they're using to support that massive population and try to industrialize. And then they would fine the United States for any little bit that they used here and then send that money to India and China. It was just a ripoff. And it's about taking down the United States. That's what the UN is. That's what the climate change thing is all about. And the scientists are the bane of this entire issue. They are promoting climate change. So let's go through when somebody talks about climate change. Here's the real science. Number one, every power plant on the planet, including the United States, every day is putting out a tremendous amount of heat. Only 20% of the heat generated in coal-fired, natural gas, nuclear, whatever the source of power, number two, fuel oil, these are belching 80% of the heat they generate directly into the atmosphere right now. This is not waiting 20 years for a little bit of greenhouse effect to occur. And you notice that nobody ever mentions the word greenhouse effect anymore because it's been thoroughly disproven. So anyway, this heat that's coming into the atmosphere, what does it do? It goes up. And it becomes neutralized, not down at ground level, but up high. And that's where the heat actually leaves the atmosphere every day. How do you think the Earth gets rid of all of this incredible amount of heat from automobiles and from buses, from volcanoes? It goes up. Heat rises. If you haven't ever looked at a heat balloon, a hot air balloon, that's what they do. You fill them full of hot air and they rise very quickly, even with a lot of weight attached to them. So without any weight attached to them, heat rises. Okay, so once again, they are selling what we call science fear porn, climate change. And what's the end result? Control of you, passing all kinds of laws for taxation, making everybody fear, making moms you run around and jump up and down that, only 12 years left and we're all going to die. They're teaching this to kids. It's garbage science. Okay, so that amount of heat coming out of smokestacks of all kinds or cooling towers for nuclear goes directly into the atmosphere. It's gazillions of times more heat into the atmosphere than greenhouse effect would ever imagine. Then it's right now in the atmosphere every night gets rid of that heat every day, every day, every day. Or we would have massive heat buildup. The Earth, this is point number two, the Earth is not, I repeat, the Earth is not a greenhouse. A greenhouse has a glass cover. The Earth's atmosphere does not have a glass cover. If you put a layer of carbon dioxide in place of glass and tried to make a greenhouse, you know what would happen? All the heat would leave and you would not have the greenhouse with the glass roof creating extra heat. The heat is maintained in a greenhouse because you have a glass roof, not an air roof, a glass roof. And that means that's why your car heats up in the summertime. You leave your windows closed, gets hot inside when you leave it in the sun. That's because the glass, the heat, the sun comes in, heats up, and it can't get out because of glass. Class, sit there, my students out there, the heat doesn't get out because of glass. The heat, the radiation can come in, and also the radiation heats the outside of the car, the metal, it's absorbed, and so that heats up the car, but it can't get out because it's trapped inside because there's a shield there. The Earth does not have a shield. That's point number two. Point number three, the greenhouse effect began because of the planet Venus. Venus has an atmosphere 1,000 times larger than Earth's. It's primarily CO2. And the greenhouse effect does not work on Venus. When we look at Venus, Venus is a planet that shows its one side to the sun. It rotates very slowly. So there's no wind at the surface of Venus. Russians have had many spacecraft there. There is no wind at the surface of Venus. And the nighttime side temperature of Venus is exactly the same as the daytime side of Venus. So how does the heat get from the sun side around to the dark side where there's no sun at all? Well, the answer is that the heat high temperature of Venus is due to excess thermal heat from the planet itself, because it's a recently formed planet. And then here comes the bad science of NASA, saying that all the planets are 4.5 billion years old. So therefore, the only thing that could cause Venus's high temperature is the greenhouse effect. But there's no way to get the heat that's from the alleged greenhouse effect on the sunward side to the night side. Okay, number four. The greenhouse then on Earth, if you look at the CO2 content of Earth and all of the alleged greenhouse gases on Earth, it's 0.04% of the atmosphere. A minuscule amount of our atmosphere is so-called greenhouse gases. So raising the amount of CO2 on Earth is not going to do anything. It's like if you take the table you're on, and fill it with golf balls. Okay, you're going to have to put 10,000 golf balls on the table. Those are atmospheric molecules. And then put one black ball on the table along with those 10,000. That's the carbon dioxide molecule. The other 10,000 are other types of non-greenhouse gas molecules, including oxygen and nitrogen primarily. So it's about 79% nitrogen, it's about 21% oxygen, and way off. Okay, so that means in that 0.04% of carbon dioxide and other alleged greenhouse gases, take a table, put 10,000 golf balls on a table, 10,000, that's a lot of golf balls. You probably can't afford it. I couldn't afford to buy 10,000 golf balls. Maybe we could find something cheaper. But okay, 10,000 golf balls on a table. Now put one black one there. That's the carbon dioxide molecule. Okay? And all the rest are not. So what you have is we have an atmosphere that's carbon dioxide transparent. Okay? The atmosphere is transparent relative to carbon dioxide. There's not enough to cause some kind of glass imitation greenhouse effect on planet Earth. Number whatever, I'm probably on 5 or 6 here. We need more carbon dioxide. When you enrich the carbon dioxide, and they actually do this in greenhouses, mind you. They do this in greenhouses and in hydroponics growth centers. They double or triple the amount of carbon dioxide, and the plants go bonkers. So if you increase the amount of carbon dioxide, then you will have much better growth. Then that plant life will absorb sunlight. You will not have as much desertification, which was the original topic. And then the other point is, let's go to number 6. You really should not be burning coal or nuclear or natural gas or number 2 fuel oil or gasoline. You should not be burning any of those. We had electric cars at the beginning of the 19th century. So do you see how the people who control the oil industry also control the water? Also control the climate change narrative. And so they want to make it like this. You have to understand how constructed disinformation plans work. They create both sides of the equation, and they get a lot of unsuspecting, stupid public to buy into this. Now, the other issue is that the United Nations is starting an all-out pandering to the poorest countries in the world, saying you are the victims of global climate change. The United States is bad. You are the victims because you're having more cyclones, etc. And these cyclones could be, in the case of Michael going into Florida, was man-made. It was man-manipulated. It was a Category 1 hurricane, which is not too bad. You're going to have some trees blow over, some other things. But it went in as a Category 5, and it built from a Category 1 to a Category 5 hurricane in about 4 hours. That's impossible. And so, you know, then the United Nations, which just launched this effort to go out and preach to the poorest people in the world. They're starting in Fiji, in Vanuatu, in other Melanesian islands and Micronesia islands, saying that you are the victims and we're going to get you money. And so the politicians of those places are all in. It's like, oh, we're going to get some money. We're in agreement. Everybody talk about global climate change. Teach the kids, because we're going to get, the politicians are going to get their skids greased, their money. They're going to get some money in their hands. And it's pretty hard to make money if you're some politician and living on Fiji. But if the UN comes in and says, we're going to get you money, woo, baby, where do we sign up? And so this is what's going on. And they're working on the kids in schools. In the United States, kids are being taught that in 12 years, their future is not going to be non-existent because of global climate change. This is what's going on in the planet today. And in the meantime, while they're trying to solve a non-issue with solutions that are simply going to destroy the United States economy, and that is the goal, that was the goal, and with the Wicked Witch of the West, if she had won the presidency, which she almost did, the United States would be deep in debt right now. There would be no jobs. The last few jobs of the United States would have been shipped offshore. The Obamacare, which was designed to break the United States, it wasn't about health care. It's still not about health care. These politicians like Kamala Harris, how many illegal aliens have spent the night at her house? She is so generous with your money. But when it comes to illegal aliens staying at her house, charity ends at the front door of her housing complex. Yes, those people live in the lap of luxury, but they don't have any illegal aliens staying at their house. They're not sharing breakfast, breaking bread in the evening with illegal aliens in their house, but they want you to do that in your house. You know, they're just liars. And the whole reason for it, public health care, universal health care, and universal health care for everybody that managed to get it into the country, is to break the United States. That's all it ever was. That's all it is. Those people are controlled by the World Bank. These are World Bank Joe Biden. You know, he's a guy that, Sleepy Joe, he's a guy that was the Obama vice president. He was instrumental in breaking the Ukraine, bringing in the United States to take over the oil and gas industry in the Ukraine. That's what it was all about. So anyway, I'm kind of off on a tangent here, but I had to talk about this issue of global climate change, because just like gun control, they're going to try and use the youth to target these topics, just like the shooting recently at the STEM school in Colorado. The immediate thing when the students were trying to have a vigil to honor their student that died, the politicians come in and they go, gun control. The moms come in, gun control laws. And the students, thank goodness, these students got up and walked out. I saw it and I was amazed and I cheer these students. I think that our young students are getting the idea that they're being used and they're being drawn into a trap that's going to destroy their future, and it ain't global warming is the problem. That's not the problem. Global warming is not the problem of these students' futures. It's the politicians that are planning basically a new world order, the Hunger Games. That's where these kids are going with the new world order, which completely controls the Democratic Party. And I'm not political. They control the Republican Party. That's why so many Republicans quit, because they knew that when the investigation started, the pedophilia and all of the other things going on, the Baal worship, I'm not going to repeat everything I talked about. Yesterday, I was a guest on the Power Hour with Daniel Brigman, second hour. I think it was the second hour. Anyway, one of the hours of the, it was the second hour, yes, of the Power Hour yesterday. Listen to that very powerful interview, and I will go into the whole issue of Baal and Baal worship around the world. So go listen to that. I'm not going to repeat all that. I'm talking about global climate change, things here that I did not include in that show. Also, I talked about this on the John Moore show yesterday, where I was a guest also. And so listen to those shows also, because then you're going to get a much more fuller picture. You're going to get a fuller picture, a much more complete picture regarding Baal worship, which is central in this whole idea of climate change. Who's pushing it? Why are they pushing it, et cetera? Okay, so now let's go back to the issue of desertification and how to prevent it. Now, there's a guy, his name is, let me make sure I get this right, his name is Alan Savory, and he lived in Africa, and he went through many phases of trying to, he was in charge of parks there. He had gone through many phases of trying to fix the desertification problem in Africa, and they came back to the fact that they needed vast herds of animals roaming those areas to prevent the desertification. And what they did is they would eat the grass in the grasslands, they would defecate, and then they would move on. And then that grass was fertilized and would grow back. And these vast herds of animals moving around, which was what was there for thousands of years, he said that works. That's an ecosystem that works. And he's been highly criticized by people that claim that animal farts cause greenhouse gas, so we can't have any of those animals around here. But you remember that when the white man in Washington decided to eradicate the Indians, the Native Americans, that were living, if they're the indigenous tribes, let's put it that way, because in a sense it's incorrect to call them Native Americans because the name America came after it was discovered by the white people. So indigenous peoples lived off of the buffalo, and so they killed them down to there were only a couple hundred left. They went out and killed the buffalo so that the Indians had nothing to eat. That's literally what was going on. So that's what's going on also today with to prevent herds of buffalo and other range animals to come back. Because literally, if we had the buffalo on planet Earth right now, we could survive forever eating the buffalo. There were, you know, the vast numbers of buffalo just ranging on the prairies naturally.
And I might add this ludicrous concept that the gas coming from the digestive tracts of animals somehow causes global warming. Because let me tell you, the herds of buffalo dwarfed the cattle herds that are out there today. And so was there massive global warming? I don't remember anybody in the 1800s complaining about buffalo gas causing global warming. Anyway, the bottom line is with global warming, point number seven, is we are coming out of an ice age. And what is happening on Earth with the reduction of glaciation is a natural process because we, only a few thousand years ago, were very deep in an ice age. When the white man first came to the North American continent, there were still vast glaciers up in the Rocky Mountains that have since disappeared. Also up in the mountains in the Alps in Europe and in other mountain ranges around the world. So what's going on is we literally are coming out of an ice age. And so the warming that we're seeing is accelerated. I talk about this in my weather book. So that's point number seven relative to the global climate change hoax. The great global climate change hoax. The other issue there is, as I mentioned, that scientists
have a way of, let's say, assimilating to topics that generate money for them. Because a long time ago, back in the 1900s somewhere, scientists forgot or lost the ability to come up with good ideas and research on their own. It was around World War II, actually, where government-sponsored science came in, and Dwight Eisenhower warned against this in his farewell speech. There's the famous speech about the military-industrial complex, which lasted for about 15 seconds, and then he went on for many minutes talking about the real danger in the United States is government-sponsored science, where no longer did you have individual scientists working, like myself, working out of interest, working out of discovery, working honestly to bring correct information in science. Two, it evolved into the current situation where scientists are employed by the government. Even if they're in private industry, their money comes from the government. Or if they're involved in, say, oil or other businesses, they tend to be slanted towards whatever that is. So you have the oil industry scientists saying one thing, and you have the government-paid scientists saying another thing. And you know what? Nothing has happened. There's been no reduction in the proliferation of petroleum products or petroleum burning. There has been no limitation or reduction in the amount of coal, natural gas, nuclear to produce energy. There's been no conservation. So all of the global climate change hoopla has done nothing except put more regulation on businesses and prevented, by the way, real innovation, because the big companies that have interest, vested interest in the Central Power Company, General Electric and Siemens, are basically, they're the ones that have the wind energy projects. And the wind energy is little teeny piece of their business. And they basically are sucking up all of the alternative energy money through collusion with government officials to pass them through. We know for a fact that the Clinton Foundation was being used to bribe the German government and about 130 other governments around the world to install three-blade wind turbines from Siemens and General Electric. So the kickbacks going into the Clinton Foundation and then the movement going out. Remember in Hillary Clinton, in her campaign, she said, we're going to put in 50 million solar panels around the country. Well, hey, that's all kickback money. Yeah, you know, if you knew somebody, if you had a business selling product X, whatever the product is, and you could get some government official to say, wow, everybody on the planet needs product X. And we as the government believe that so much, we're going to supplement it. We're going to subsidize it. And we're going to actually pay those industries money up to 40% of the retail price, in some cases more, so that everybody goes out and buys product X. You would have a pretty sweet deal, and that's the situation with solar panels. Right now, there's a debate in Congress as to whether to continue these subsidies, these amazingly huge subsidies for wind and solar. And 5 years ago, when these subsidies were put into place, the alternative energy industries, electric, wind turbines, and solar panels, said, oh, we only need it for 5 years. After that, we'll bring pricing down, we'll have the market captured, and we won't need government subsidies anymore. But now they're back at the table, and it turns out that their whole business model was based on having 40% subsidies, their profit model, everything was based on that. And now they will all fold like an old, like an old suit in a suitcase. They're all going to fold, and they already are. There's a lot of places that were selling products that depended on government subsidies or government purchases this past year. About a year ago, actually, in China, China put a moratorium on solar panels because they realized that the solar panels The more they installed, the worse the situation got, where there was great fluctuations in the energy output of the solar panels, which were all grid connect. So they couldn't ramp up and down their power plants on a short minute, short notice, as when the clouds came in, because the majority of energy in China is still coal, dirty coal, very dirty coal. And they're starting to bring online natural gas power plants, but it's still a small percentage. But you cannot bring a coal-fired power plant up and down on a moment's notice. Simply not possible. And so they realized that solar doesn't work. So they put a moratorium, no more solar panels. And in one day, the global solar panel market crashed. In the first day, it lost 40% of its value on the stock market, because people realized that, hey, the good old government subsidies ain't going to be there anymore. China, the biggest installer of solar panels on the planet, just realized that it's a scam. It's not going to work. And the more they put in, the worse it got. So they just shut it down. And so now China has vast amounts of solar panels installed and not using them. That's why you're going to see the power companies in the United States and in other places pushing solar panels. Oh, get them for free. They're going to give them to you. And this is because government subsidies are there. They're going to do anything to get you to install solar panels because they know they're not going to work. Very simply. It's not going to compete with their business model. Now, energy is king in terms of if you look at any business model or investments. Let's take a look at the people like Bill Gates and big, other people like T. Boone Pickens and Howard or Buffett, what's his name? Bill Gates, all have a lot of their investment into energy. Bill Gates has a society out there that I forget what the name of it is, but they have a webpage and they say, send us your ideas about energy. We'll develop them. And then in the fine print, it says, if you send us information, we own it. We are not going to honor any patents or discovery or intellectual property of anybody. They just own it by proclamation, which, they're counting on the small, intelligent guy that's got good ideas to send them information, and then they just own it. Well, isn't that swell? No, these people are corrupt, and this is part of the New World Order. These people... When Billy Gates was going to be sued for running a monopoly with Windows and with Microsoft, and the FBI and everybody, the Department of Justice was going after Billy Gates, the reason was because he wouldn't allow, he was going to be a strong kid on the block, he wasn't going to allow the CIA and the NSA to put the hooks into your computers through their Microsoft products to spy on you. And so anyway, they came in, they said, okay, you're all done. We're going to take all your money away. And if you play ball with us and allow us to put all of these hacking hooks into the software, then you will get to be a billionaire. You will get to buddy around with Clinton and the New World Order. So, Bill Gates folded. He gave up. Took his money because that's his winning. He had two choices, lose everything or take his winnings and sell you out. He took the low road. Yeah, and so when when Michelle Obama says they take the high road, no, they've always been on the low road, the real low road, the low road to basically to China, literally. Anyway, so getting back to the topic of water, etc., and energy, you can see that the whole issue with energy is it's an owned commodity. And that goes along with water also. Water is an owned commodity. Okay, so I wanted to get some of this information in about global climate change because it's very important to understand, very important for our kids to understand the real story of the global climate change hoax. Just like the school shooting, set up school shootings, of many of which were set ups. And once again, we have another school shooting, and nobody's investigating how these kids that are involved in shootings, etc., got to be where they were. How did these people, are they involved in a mind control program that through the, the back door of the CIA, the NSA, and other New World Order agencies? Anyway, these things are all related, if you haven't figured this out yet. Okay, so going back to desertification. Now that you understand that climate change is a hoax, that anybody coming up with real ideas to stop the desertification process on Earth, because you see, if there are deserts and people can't use that land to grow crops to feed themselves, then the big companies like Monsanto, who has created deserts in the United States, like I said, the scope, if you go to Indiana, Ohio, Iowa, Minnesota, southern Minnesota, the Dakotas, Nebraska, Kansas, those are the breadbaskets, partly Oklahoma, a little bit of Texas, but those states have been destroyed with Monsanto's glyphosate Roundup. And so you have a desert, the only thing that can grow there is Monsanto products. Monsanto corn, soybeans, etc. And then that is then moved onto the world markets by these companies. So farmers have become slaves to this process. Okay, but anyway, they don't want solutions for desertification or reverse desertification. In other words, they don't want any solutions that would solve the desertification problem. Okay, but... Okay, I was giving you some ideas, and they always talk about the water coming off of Greenland coming into the ocean. If you look at the rate of evaporation on the oceans and the rate of water coming out of the air, as I said, there is about 6 Great Lake volumes. Now, take all the water in the Great Lakes and then compare that to the amount of water in the air at any given time that's in the Earth's atmosphere. The Earth's atmosphere has about 6 times the volume of water in the Great Lakes. About 6 times that amount of water in the atmosphere at any given time. That's a lot of water. Comparatively, the Greenland ice melt per year, which, by the way, there's nobody counting how much of that comes back because it only melts during the summertime, primarily, and then during the wintertime, the water that is in the form of snow that falls on Greenland, nobody's counting that, how much actually is returned. But even if you don't count that, the amount of ice being lost per year from Iceland is 0.007, 0.001 of the Lake Superior volume, or the Great Lakes volume of water. Okay, so comparatively, it's a minuscule amount of water, and then you could probably cut that by 60 to 70% because that much water evaporates from the ocean, falls on there, and it doesn't have to evaporate from that locale on the planet. It just has to snow somewhere up in Greenland, which it does probably for around, a good 6 months of the year. And so that is not accounted for. But anyway, those are, they're such small quantities. Now, this brings me up to my main point. If you want to reverse desertification, let me give you 3 methods and then compare them. Method number one, capture the runoff from Antarctica and Greenland, that's fresh water melting, going off into the ocean, capture that, and then move it by ship to some location to try and reverse desertification. I've already talked about that. It's very expensive to run the ships, etc. What else could be going on? Well, we could move water from places where it is located, such as rivers and flood areas, etc., and move it up to the deserts by piping, by pumping, and we could use the wing generator to do that. But then again, when you're looking at the volumes of water that it would be necessary, for example, to green the Sahara Desert, this is a vast, vast amount of water to be pumped, and then where are you going to get it from? Where would you get this from? Would you get it from Greenland? Would there be enough water to green the Sahara Desert? And then what would you do with the water once you got it there to the Sahara Desert? You would need reservoirs. It would take a lot of construction. And then you'd have to distribute the water out along over the entire surface of the desert, etc. And now I'm going to give you solution number three, which I have talked about for literally now decades. And a side point here, you cannot get politicians away from haggling over who released a document on a certain date, or was it 2 weeks later. You know, there are so many important topics and things in the world that have to be dealt with, and they're just lost in this never-never land of he said, she said, they said, it said, whatever. It's just, yeah, politicians are the bane of society. But anyway, let me give you the third method, which I've talked about and I've tried to promote, but you cannot get a word edgewise in because all of the government science controls all of the fake science news media. And there was fake science news long, long, long ago. Fake science news. Okay. What is the solution that would work for reverse desertification? And that is to take the rain and the water in the air and find a way, which I have done, to have the water streams, the rivers of water that are in the air, move towards and over a place that's desert and have it rain. And now, how do you do that? Well, it's best done at night, timing it at night, because the desert is cold. It's very cold on the desert at night. And if the problem with the daytime in the desert is the heat rises, and also any water that would fall would evaporate very quickly. So if you could bring the rain in early in the evening, get it to rain, you would have the maximum amount of time for the rain to do its work in growing crops, etc., growing plants. And literally, no matter where you are on planet Earth, something is going to grow if you can get water there, except where Monsanto has killed it with glyphosate. Then no matter how much rain you put there, nothing's going to grow, like Indiana or Kansas, Nebraska, where they've covered the entire state in glyphosate. Okay, but here's how you do it. And I've talked about this before. I talked about this in my weather book, that you have laser satellites. You create low-pressure cells. That's the enhancement technique that's used to manipulate hurricanes. It's not HAARP. By the way, anybody that still talks about HAARP, HAARP has not been used for at least 10 years, probably longer. And they just love people going around talking about HAARP because HAARP is a non-entity. It's not been used. It's very little effect. I mean, it was a World War II technology, literally, post-World War II technology. And it had some things that it could do. But the real manipulation of weather is done with laser satellites. And what does the laser do? It breaks down the dielectric in the atmosphere, and it causes a current flow. And what does the current flow do? It causes the ions that are near the surface of the Earth to be drawn upwards, and that's what the cyclonic condition is in a hurricane, for example. That's a natural condition in a hurricane. I'm not going to go into all the details here, but you can duplicate that with a laser satellite. So now you can create low-pressure cells. You don't have to create hurricanes. And what the low pressure cell does over the ocean is it gathers the water together. It moves it into basically a cyclonic type of storm system, and then you bring it over land, and you do this in the evening, so then it rains on the desert. Now, if you could get it to rain on the desert day after day after day, then you could get the crops growing or other plants growing. And there are plants that people have studied that once they're planted, they can take over a desert area and grow. And then that's the beginning stage. And then eventually trees start to grow and birds start to live there. Birds start to bring in seeds from other places. And you have an ecosystem that starts to flourish. And once you get that, then the plant life absorbs the green part, everything but the green part of the electromagnetic spectrum of the light from the sun. It cools the region, and then the rain cycle starts naturally. So you only have to do this for a little while. You don't have to do this forever. And we could change, reverse desertification. We could double the available land area of Earth overnight. Now, let me just add one slight point here when we're talking about this. If you take the entire population of the Earth, which I think is at 10 billion, not 7 billion. I don't think we have 7 billion people on the world Earth's surface right now. I think we have more like 10 billion because these countries don't know how many people they have. They literally don't know and they don't care. But that's almost a moot point. But the point is we will be getting to 10 billion very soon. And we'll be getting to about, probably 15 to 20 billion within the next 10 years for sure. But if you take these people and distribute them evenly over the world, there's not enough land. There's not enough viable land for crops for this vast number of people. So the world is literally, according to these numbers, the ability to grow crops to feed the people and the ability to have fresh water to give people a sustainable lifestyle, there's not enough land or water available for these large numbers of people. And so anyway, this is just science numbers, understanding the numbers. And of course, while the UN is off jumping up and down, trying to impose global climate change on everybody, the real problems of the world are going unsolved. Okay, so anyway, I'll be back next week. I'll be talking more about, there's so many things going on. SpaceX is launching 60 satellites. I believe it was yesterday or Tuesday. Cleansing of the internet that's going on right now. I wanted to mention Roger Stone and being basically a political prisoner on this ongoing thing where he has been sequestered. They're not allowing his attorneys to see the accusations or all the paperwork revolving the accusations. NASA thinks it's going to go to the moon in 2024. I'm going to talk about that. Elon Musk has already sold a ticket to go to the moon. Are people able to go to the moon? How about humans to Mars? Anyway, I'm out of time. I'll be talking to you next week. This is Jim McKenney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.